Welcome into the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Great show today, folks. Got an old friend with us today. We're going to jump into that topic in just a moment. But first, a couple of things to take care of before we do that. One, I had the pleasure of seeing a movie that you're going to have the pleasure of seeing, I'm sure, this weekend, this holiday weekend. I got to see Jurassic World Dominion this weekend, or actually earlier this week. You'll get to see it this weekend. Excellent movie, folks. Highly recommend it. I'm sure you've seen the trailers left and right, forwards and backwards on television or online, wherever you're seeing your trailers. Just briefly, Gareth Edwards is the director of this movie. It was written by David Koepp. Excellent script. Even though Steven Spielberg is only the executive producer of this movie, it feels like this shouldn't be a Jurassic World movie, that this should actually be a Jurassic Park movie. It feels very much like some of the originals. It really fits well into that original trilogy and is an excellent movie indeed. Just to give you a brief overview, ImGen, who's the original company, has decided that they're going to go back to this one specific island, the original island where they left the original dinosaurs, because they're going to develop a medication that is going to solve heart disease. And they do it by taking the DNA from three specific dinosaurs. And essentially they've hired Scarlett Johansson's character as a mercenary to try and get the DNA from these three dinosaurs. It turns out that Zora, her character, also lost her mother to heart disease. Little picadillo that makes her want to go get this DNA on top of the huge amount of money they're paying her. And there you go. Hijinks ensues. Along the way, a quarter of the way through the movie, as she assembles her crew and they go out to go to this island where, again, this is the only place where dinosaurs exist because they've all started to die off, or they have died off. And essentially the world has not only forgotten about these dinosaurs, but don't care about them anymore. They run across a family who's sailing across the world, essentially, in a catamaran. And they run into one of these dinosaurs, one of these three dinosaurs that they're trying to get. And again, they make a decision to try to save this family, and they become part of this crew. And again, you get your heartstrings tugged there as well. Excellent script. And it's one of those things where you don't expect that out of a summer blockbuster. You would expect a lot of action. You expect a lot of dinosaurs. And really, I think in some of the latter Jurassic Park, Jurassic World movies, we got a lot of dinosaurs, we got a lot of action, and maybe the story didn't follow so much. That's not the case here. You got good story, good action. You even got a few places where you feel the tension so much you want to get up and jump up and shout at the screen, which we haven't had a lot of those moments recently in Jurassic Park and Jurassic World movies. So I tip my cap to this movie. I think between David Koepp and Gareth Edwards, they've done an excellent job, and they've reestablished the franchise. So with that, I give it 4 out of 5 stars, and I encourage you to go this weekend and go see Jurassic World Rebirth. So there you go. All right. One other note before we get going here. It was, as we're taping here, it was yesterday, it would be 2 days ago now, that it was announced that Chetan Nuar had passed away. Chetan Nuar, for those of you who aren't familiar, is a cryptozoologist in our field. I know a lot of you are familiar with her. A lot of you who have gone to Michigan Paracon have run into her and know of her work. She's put out a lot of materials on the field. She's well known from the podcast world. Been on a lot of different podcasts, and she'll be sorely missed. She was a bright star in our field, and we're going to miss her greatly. So rest in peace, Chetan, and hopefully those answers you were seeking, you got on the other side and know exactly what is out there, and you sought what you were seeking now. So hopefully we all see you on the other side as much, And get to have one last drink with you on the other side there, as we had with you here on Michigan Paracon. I know I will miss her as well. I a lot of good times at Michigan Paracon. So rest in peace, Shatan. All right, let's get to today's program. Today's program, we welcome back an old friend. And an old friend that has been dubbed the Mark Twain of the paranormal from a colleague of ours at Fate Magazine. And it's well-deserved because he can spin a tale, folks. The new book is called The Kansack Ghost, and it is a good one. I had the pleasure of sitting down and reading it this weekend, and it is a good book indeed. Let's welcome back, by the way, a psychic medium for over 50 years, many, many good books, and many, many more to come. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome back John Russell to the program. John, how you doing?
Tim, bless your heart. It's great to be here, man. Thank you for the warm welcome and the kind words. And I always look forward to being on your show. It's always such an honor. We always have such a good talk.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Of course, I never have to ask you what's the premise or what's the motivation for writing another book. There's always more stories and whatnot. But in this case, I guess I will ask you what spurned the motivation for this particular set of stories?
You know, it's kind of like the other side gives me guidance when I put a book together, and they bring to mind experiences I've had and kind of put them in an order for me that kind of makes sense. That each book has its own particular tone, I think, mm-hmm. and its own particular energy. And some of those stories fit together better in one book than they do in the other. And so I think that the other side just kind of prompts me and says, hey, you know, this story is going to make a good fit for this book. Put this story in, group this story in there. And they kind of give me the order of the stories to put them in when I write the book. So really the inspiration just kind of comes from the other side, and I flow with that. And, you know, I've had so many experiences, as we've discussed, and it really is helpful to me that the other side comes to me and kind of makes sense of how to structure those books and how to put those stories together. And like I say, each book does have its own distinct tone, its own distinct feel, its own distinct energy. And I think that that's a direct process of the other side involving themselves and helping me put things together.
What I love about The Kansack Ghost is this, John. You have this interesting tug-of-war or push-pull with skepticism versus believers in this book.
Right.
And it's a theme that runs throughout the book, which I find kind of refreshing because it seems like these days, and don't take this the wrong way, my friend, but mm-hmm. you obviously psychic medium comes up first when you put it out there as an author, and you're of course going to have skeptics come to a book that's written by a psychic medium and say, well, okay, well, you're writing it from a believer's perspective. How can I, how can I put my skeptic's hat on and say, well, of course you're going to have these experiences. But you're not shy about going after cynics, and you do separate automatically in this book, which I absolutely loved, the difference between, and let's get into it right away, a skeptic and a cynic. And you bring up a very good example, one that I brought up on this program many times. Do you want to talk about Mr. James Randi at first?
Yes, let's talk about James Randi. James Randi, and I go into to length discussing Randi in my book. And the interesting thing, I cannot remember the name of the special. It was Randi's TV special, and it wasn't an Inconvenient Truth. It wasn't no, that's Al Gore. Never mind. What was it? Oh, now it's escaping entirely. Some psychic, right? It'll come to me here in a second. But I was on an interview one time, and somebody in the chat suggested the title of that movie, and I went and looked it up. Like, no, that wasn't it. It's been a long, long time ago, and it was on broadcast TV, and I taped it on VHS. This is how long ago it's been, and I have the tape somewhere, but we moved 9 times, and it's like low on my list to find it. But anyways, the point being, I saw this with my own eyes. So there was a psychic that had applied for Randi's $1 million challenge. And what James Randi did, he established the James Randi Educational Foundation. And they issued a $1 million challenge to any psychic that could pass the test proved their psychic abilities to Randy's satisfaction, and he had given them $1 million. So that money was as safe and secure as if it was locked up in Fort Knox. Nobody on the planet was ever going to win that money. Mm-hmm. And I go into some detail about that in my book as well. But anyways, this one psychic had applied for the challenge. And Randy, to the best of my remembrance, it was some object that a friend had given Randy. And Randy said, if this guy could discern anything about this object, that in itself would be a miracle, because very few people, even among my friends, know the origin of this object, where it came from, and the person who gave it to me, and so on and so forth. So the best I remember, the guy was doing psychometry, and Randy gave him the object, and the guy began to tell him accurate things about the object, where it came from, and that it was a gift from this friend, and basically the best I remember, kind of what the friend looked like, and so on and so forth. And Randy admits in the special, so far this guy is batting 1,000. Mm-hmm. Now Randy says this, right? So then the psychic says, there's something unusual about your friend's neck, about the way he dresses. He said, it kind of reminds me of like a clerical collar or like a Nehru jacket or something around his neck. And so Randy took the clerical collar literally, and the guy said, like a clerical collar. Not that it was a clerical collar, but that it was like or reminded him of a clerical collar or a Nehru jacket. So Randy took that literally and said, no, it wasn't. My friend is not a priest, doesn't wear a clerical collar or Nehru jacket or anything like that. So the guy's wrong, and he didn't get the prize. So come to find out, Randy then turns around and admits that his friend has a predilection for wearing turtleneck sweaters a lot. So there is this thing around the guy's neck. There is this unusual, he's like, there's something I see here around your friend's neck. So the psychic was correct. So I was doing radio, being interviewed on this one particular radio show in New York a lot when we lived in New York. Or it actually originated in Wisconsin, and we were living in New York. So the host called me one day, and I said, oh, hey, how you doing? Just got to talking. And then I kind of panicked. I was like, are we supposed to be on the air today? And he's like, no. He said, I just have a guest coming, and guess who it is? And I don't remember if I hazarded a guess or not. And he finally tells me, he says, James Randi. I said, oh, my God, the James Randi is coming on your show. And he said, yeah. And he said, I want you to be on to give him a run for his money. And because I had a longstanding history on this radio show, and people called in all the time, and I gave them readings, I gave them insights, and they would call the station back and go, oh, my God, it came true exactly like John said it would, and da-da-da-da-da. So even the skeptics and the people that just called in for fun would call back and say, man, John was right. John was accurate. So he wanted me on there to give Randy a run for his money. And there was no way that I could reschedule my schedule so that I could be on the show when Randy was going to be on. So I was crestfallen. He was disappointed. And he said, well, give me something I can shoot at Randy then. I said, okay. Ask him about the guy, you know, with the psychometry and the thing. And then also ask him, this is a question I ask everybody. And I say, if you answer honestly in your deepest heart of hearts, haven't you had at least one experience on this planet that you can't explain by normal rational means? So he said, okay. So he got Randy on the show, and after he aired, he called me back. And we were talking about this just the other day, as a matter of fact, because of the vehemence with which Randy responded. So to the second question, but he said, I asked Randy, you know, what you said about the guy that was, by his own admission, batting 1,000 until he misinterpreted the neck thing, said that was wrong. And Randy says, we set this up in advance. I'm the sole arbiter of what's right and what's wrong. I make all the rules. I make all the decisions. And if one thing's wrong, everything's wrong. Now, how unfair can you possibly be? That would be like getting an 80 or a 90 on a test, and then the teacher giving you an F because, well, you missed one. If one's wrong, they're all wrong.
Right.
I mean, that's insane. That's nuts. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So that was Randy's rationale. And then when my friend asked him, in your heart of hearts, you know, if you're being totally honest, haven't you ever experienced at least one thing in your life that you couldn't account for by normal means? And he said Randy's answer was so loud and terse and angry and abrupt that it almost jerked him back from the microphone. Randy went, no, next question. He was like, so that was Randy. And, you know, Randy had his mind made up before he ever went into anything that there was nothing to any of it. And so that's not a skeptic, that's a cynic.
Right.
And a skeptic is a person that says, okay, if you can move an object with kinetic energy 2 tries out of 10, let's see it. Let's show me, you know. I'll give you 30 tries here. That's 6 chances to move that object. And if it doesn't work that day at all, you say, well, let's try another day. Maybe the conditions are right. Show me again. And if it's obvious that the guy is using stage magic, or if they're just a phony or whatever, they just can't do it, then you write it off and you go on. You say, okay, that one was not true. That one was not correct. This person was a liar or a deceiver or self-deluded or whatever. But you've got to at least be willing to try. You at least give them the effort. And then if they do it, you say, wow, you know, hey, something's going on here. So it astonished me that Randy, by his own admission, would say that the guy was batting 1,000. That, in my mind, if I were Randy, would be enough to say, hey, something's going on here that I can't explain. You know,
right.
He's hitting things that nobody knows. Yeah. I don't know how he's doing it, but he's doing it. Let's investigate this further. Let's open up and be receptive to this. But he was never that way.
Randy appeared twice on this program. The first time he appeared on the program, we put him head-to-head with Lou Gentile, who at the time was going for the JREF prize. Randy accused Lou of ducking him, which when we put him face-to-face with Lou, you soon found out that it really wasn't the fact that Lou was ducking him. Lou was desperately trying to get the prize. But as you mentioned, you know, James Randi kept putting the brass ring there and he was reaching for it. But of course, he kept pulling the brass rings away. And when we tried to get James to you know, nail down a set of rules, he said, well, there are a set of rules. Okay, well, what are the set of rules? Well, it's all on my website. Well, okay. But then, you know, the goalposts keep moving a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the second time, of course, by the time he gets Lou to come in and then the scientific rules are set and it's agreed upon by independent researchers, Lou dies. He has some sort of agent, because Lou in his spare, not in his spare time, but in his day job, is an HVAC HVAC technician and had an accident on the job and died. So Lou succumbs to injuries and dies. So he never gets a true run at the JREF prize.
At the prize, yeah.
The second time we have Randy on, and he is one of the most difficult interviews you would have ever had. So
I can imagine.
I tip my cap to whoever had to do documentaries on him, whoever had to sit down with him and interview him. He is a tough interview. Because he's a hard nut to crack. He's a hard guy to get to open up because, as you point out in the book, he had one main secret he kept for a long time, but he had many secrets, and he was a locked box, right?
Exactly.
He didn't want to let anything go, but that's a magician. A magician has many secrets and doesn't want to let any of them go, right?
Right. Right.
What's interesting here, John, is this. When you go to the JREF website, there is no JREF prize anymore.
Really?
They've stopped doing it. There's no $1 million challenge.
How interesting.
And there is instead a JREF award. Now, what the JREF award is simply this. The JREF award is given to the person or organization that best represents the spirit of the foundation by encouraging critical questions and seeking unbiased, fact-based answers. I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
But there have been now, from 2017 to 2024, there have been six recipients of it. The first one being Susan Gerbic, who was given the award personally by Randy. Randy resigned in 2015. He was a figurehead. So really, the organization kept him around until his death. But he, you know, he was pretty much Colonel Sanders at KFC from 2015 on.
He didn't
do anything but just wave a piece of chicken and tell you that it was good. You know, so there is no $1 million challenge, so to speak, I think, because he kept moving the goalpost and it did get a bad reputation, right?
Yeah. You know, he always kept moving the goalpost. There was no way that anybody was ever going to win. And, you know, I get so frustrated with skeptics, so-called, because they're not really skeptics, they're cynics. And they're always wanting you to prove yourself in unreasonable ways, on the spot. You know, no preparation. Hey, I'm trying to catch the bus. You know, what color am I thinking of? You know, leave me alone here. I'm trying to catch the bus. You know, those types of things. And they want the other side to prove itself to them through you or directly to them in ways that are a lot of times unreasonable. And the reason I say it's unreasonable is because you can't make an appointment with a UFO. Mm-hmm. You know, the UFO is going to show up when it wants to. You hope to be there and capture it, see it, interact with it, whatever. The other side is somewhat unpredictable. I've had, as we discussed before, way over 1,000 paranormal experiences in my life on the physical realm. Some of these things I can connect with almost at will, and some of these things I can't. They come when they come, and you accept what you accept. You get what you get when you get it. And I think that that's the stumbling block when people are seeking and trying to determine if there really is anything to this. That's the stumbling block because, okay, I want to go in the library, sit you in this chair, and you tell me what's in those three boxes over there, you know?
Yeah.
And even for a psychic with a great gift, it just doesn't always work that way. And one of the things I've figured out over the years is that there is almost a short circuit that the other side throws into a psychic ability. So while on a really good day, you might be able to go in there if there were totally clear air, so to speak, and sit down and figure out what was in each one of those boxes, which is really a psychic waste of energy. You just go over and open the box up and see what's in it. But on a really clear day, you might be able to do it. But on most days, there's this type of almost a short circuit where the other side intervenes, picks up something about the person you're in there with, and starts bringing you that information. You know, and then that's not what they want, or that's not what they want to hear, or that's not the experiment, or whatever. Well, see, you can't tell me what's in the boxes. No, but I just told you what your grandmother used to serve you for breakfast that you loved and that she's here, you know. Well, I don't know if I believe that or not. So that's one of the things. I know I had a, I don't know if we talked about this before, there was, and I mentioned this in my books about, in my book about my readings, and, you'll have read it there. I don't know if we talked about it before, but there was a new client I got one time and I started reading for her and I described a person that was, she agreed was her father. And I said, your father's not dead. He's alive. She said, yeah. And I said, y'all are knocking heads over money. And she said, no. And I said, you have a trust fund? No. And you're arguing with your dad over the trust fund? No. And so I tried to go on in the reading and the other side wouldn't let me. And here's an example of where a skeptic would say, you know, oh, well, you know, this guy. But fortunately, eventually she came clean. Anyways, I tried to go on in the reading and I couldn't. I finally stopped and I said, the other side's not letting me progress forward. And they're not going to let me progress forward until we address this dad trust fund money issue. And she said, well, yes, the man you described is my dad. And yes, we are knocking heads over my trust fund. So after saying no, then she agreed, yes, that's what's happening, that's the truth. And I said, okay, and we addressed that issue, and then I could move forward in the reading. So that's an example of what I say, what I mean when I say that a lot of times people go into a reading with, you know, I want it this way, you know, and no matter what you tell me, no matter how accurate it is, I'm going to ignore it and not focus on it because I want this. I want this thing. And the other side doesn't always give you the information that way. They have different priorities than we do, and they prioritize things, information in a different manner. So that's one of the things that I think frustrates investigators and researchers, is that you don't always get what you want to get. I remember when I was shooting the pilot, the TV pilot for the History Channel, and I would go into a place and be flooded with all of these things that we could validate that were accurate, but that wasn't what the TV crew wanted in that location. They were like, can you tune in on this? You know, we need this. And I was like, well, you know, sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. So, but that's, I think that's one of the things that that frustrates people that are searching, is it is uncertain. And it is, you know, it's like, I remember this one location that I did this paranormal investigation in. And my God, every time that you turned around, there was some physical manifestation. And everybody that was there experienced it, witnessed it, saw it, felt it the whole night. Went again, maybe like a week later, something like that. Nothing, not a thing. You know, so it was like, hey, we did it all last time for you. We don't have anything new to say right now. So, you know, why are you here again?
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. So these are the types of things you encounter and what you deal with when you're doing paranormal investigations, when you're doing psychic readings, when you're attempting to make these communications. And because they do tend to be a little unreliable, I think that's one of the things that the skeptics glom onto, or the cynics rather, glom onto and say, hey, see, there's nothing to it because you didn't make it happen again. And you said it happened. Where is it? You know, well, it may not be there that time.
Is it safe to say the what makes a good skeptic and what separates it from a good cynic is the fact that a skeptic could say, after looking at a situation and deducing and weeding out everything, if they can't deduce it and can't come up with a physical explanation for it, that they can say, I don't know, and be okay with it?
Yes. Yeah. Or even be willing to go further and say, you know, hey, I've seen something here with my own eyes that there is no scientific, physical, logical explanation for. I have to acknowledge that there's something happening here outside the norm of what we usually experience on this planet. And I think so many people are unwilling to do that because I think at large we have a skeptical society. For as many believers as we do, I think we have a larger skeptical population. And I think that people are going to be reluctant to say, hey, we were in a closed building and this door opened on its own, no wind, no drafts, no one near it. And, you know, I have no explanation for that. How did that happen? And so I've got to explore this further. I've got to begin to believe that maybe there's something outside our normal experience. But then they're going to be reluctant to go and discuss that with others because others are going to make fun of them or denigrate them or, you know, laugh at them or whatever. And they're going to say, oh, yeah, well, take me, show me the door. And of course, I'll go back, stand there at the door. Nothing happened, you know. Yeah. So that's the thing that makes it difficult for an experiencer to approach other people and to talk to them about it. But more than likely, they're going to be made fun of. And even if the other person's a little bit receptive, said, well, show me, you go back, that door may not open again for 3 months on its own, you know. So it's a difficult haul, you know.
While we're on the subject, I want to talk briefly about something else you talk about in the book, and that is, you talk about briefly investigators on television, and you talk about the sharp provoking that's done on television and how it really bristles you. Tell me a little bit about what really irks you about provoking.
Well, you know, the for one thing, it's nonsensical. It's not necessary. What I desperately try and get people to understand is that whether it's a deceased loved one a deceased friend, a spirit guide, a guardian angel, a nature spirit, some type of spirit we don't even know what is, whoever and whatever is operating in these dimensions on the other side has intelligence, has emotions, has feelings, has will and volition, has goals, purposes, aims, has a raison d'etre, if you will. And to go into a place where there's someone intelligent with feeling and emotion and a great degree of spiritual power, because these beings can move things in our physical plane, and to go in there insulting these things and cursing them and challenging them is a slap in the face to the being and makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. You know, I always tell people, I say, look, if you were to go up to Mike Tyson's house, would you go up and start banging on the door nonstop and go, get out here, you blankety blank blank, show yourself, you blank, I ain't afraid of you blank, come out here, you blank. You would not do that.
No.
You'd be wind up picking your teeth up off the sidewalk after you woke up.
Yeah.
So likewise, I'm always astonished. You know, people are always saying, oh, I got beat up or scratched or pushed or killed, whatever, an investigation. I've done hundreds of paranormal investigations, never had that happen. And what amazes me is that it doesn't happen, you know, because here's these beings that can throw objects, open doors, make chairs rock, can lift things, can throw things, can manipulate our physical reality. So they could hurt you. They could hit you. They could throw something at you and do some damage to you. They could push you out a window. You know, it's like, it amazes me that when these people go in there doing all this yelling and carrying on and cursing and insulting these spirits, I'm shocked that they don't suffer some real harm or some real damage, because I believe some of these entities absolutely have that capability. So that's bothersome. It looks bad. It sounds bad. You know, it's just bad form. There's no need to it. No need for it.
As someone, then, well, I was going to say, as someone who has contact with the other side, what to you would be a proper introduction when you go on an investigation? Someone who walks in as a complete stranger into someone's home, what is an appropriate introduction?
You know what I always do? I kind of tune in, say a little prayer, send out some light, some energy beforehand, let them know I'm coming. And when I get there, I physically and verbally announce myself. I say, you know, I'm John Russell. You know, I'm a psychic. I'm a paranormal investigator. I'm an author. I've had all these experiences. And I'm here to see if there's anything that you have to share with me that's beneficial for me and or others. Is there anything you need from me or want from me that's beneficial or helpful to you? And in general, I'm just trying to enlarge my knowledge of the other side, the spiritual realm, and grow myself. And if you have anything to communicate to me, you know, I would appreciate it. And that's how I make the introduction. And it's always worked. We've gone in places and gotten information that's been verified. And I did it in polite ways. I did it by listening to the spirits there. And I always tell them, if you have a story to tell, if you have something to say, that's what I'm here for. I'm here to hear your emotions, your feelings, your memories, whatever. And I remember in this one place we were investigating, and this older spirit, and I mean older spirit, someone that had been there, you know, 100, 200 years before, came to me and said, tell my tale of woe. Hmm. Tell my tale of sorrow. You know, they wanted to be remembered. They wanted to know that people to know that they had lived in that location and what they had endured and what they had undergone and how they had been disrespected. And it wasn't necessarily for any type of reparation on the other side. It was just, hey, you know, tell my tale. And sometimes these spirits have stories that they want heard and they want remembered. You know, it's like I write my books to leave a legacy so that when I'm on the other side someday, there's those stories here in this world to help people and to guide people, to entertain people. And likewise, you know, there's spirits on the other side that are like, don't let my memory be forgotten. Don't let my story be forgotten. Don't let my experiences be forgotten. Well, so I think that's one. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, you write something in the book, which to me, it if you're of a defeatist mind, it may seem almost hopeless. But if you if you take it for what it's worth, it's very true. And that is, there's a lot in this world that's temporary. And you set the scene by talking about your home. Was it in Florida where you're talking about tomato plant and the table? Right. And you talk about how you captured it, because eventually it would all be gone, including you. In a way, if you read it in one light, it's like, oh my God, that's incredibly sad. But it's very real. Everything is
you know, this is our reality on this planet. And to me, it was this eye-opening, overarching spiritual revelation, because I was sitting there in my courtyard looking at all these things, and I thought about the ebb and flow of energy on this planet, you know, and we all die. We all make that transition. Things come into being and then they disappear, they vanish, they break, they get burned up, they get tossed away, whatever. And so this revelation came to me while I was sitting out in my courtyard, and I write about this in the Kansas Ghost, as you said. And I thought, wow, you know, I had just finished the day potting some tomato plants and some peppers and some other things. And I got to looking at everything and I thought, wow, before we came and bought and cleared this land, this house didn't exist. This house was not here. We cleared the land and built this house, and now here it is. At one point on this planet, I wasn't here. I was born, and then I came and grew up. And then I looked at the table, the chairs, the plants, and I thought, even the plants themselves, that tomato plant didn't even exist on this planet in any form anywhere before. It grew from a seed that one time didn't exist, that came from another tomato plant, and that seed was planted, turned into this tomato plant. That plant did not exist anywhere on this planet before. And then it grew up and it became this plant out of this little tiny seed, and it grew high and full of tomatoes that I would take and eat and enjoy that nourishment and absorb into my body. And then the plant would die. It'd be gone. It'd be thrown away. The table eventually succumbed to Florida's bad weather, and it broke and shattered and crashed, got thrown away. The pots that the plants were in, they decayed, fell apart, cracked, whatever, got thrown away. And all of it's now gone. It's all vanished. So it never was. It came into being. It existed. And then it vanished. It's all gone again. And I thought, what an amazing, incredible arc. And it is a painful arc, because we lose pets. Like right now on Facebook, I have a slew of friends that have just lost beloved pets, and they're heartbroken. They're just, their hearts are, you know, rended in two. And it is sorrowful to lose pets, to lose friends, to lose loved ones, to lose family members, to lose favorite things. You know, I write about a motorcycle I had that couldn't keep running for love nor money, and had to get rid of it. And that broke my heart to let that go. We get attached to things. We get attached to our possessions and the things. And there's an energy connection there and a back and forth between those things and us. So it is sad, but I've always tried to be a realist in that, okay, it hurts, yeah, but it's the order of things. And if we are willing not to use any type of denial, if we're willing to be honest with ourselves, we accept the world the way that it is, and we adapt to that, and we do our best to make it a better place and to show as much compassion as we can in it. And sometimes that becomes difficult and mind-boggling, and I write about that in my books as well. You know, it's the spiritual path is tricky. It's not easy, and it's not cut and dried, and it's not, you know, it's full of potholes, and it's full of questions, and it's full of anxieties. And the older I've gotten, the more questions I have rather than answers. But it's important that we find out as many answers as we can and operate those answers from a position of compassion and charity and love and truth, and try and keep advancing this thing to make it better and better if we can for everybody.
Tell you what, John, with that, we'll take a break, and we're going to get a little deeper when we come back. You bring up a couple of interesting points and a couple of interesting topics. I do want to talk to you about consciousness and artificial intelligence, which is a huge, huge topic with me. And then I do want to get into right and wrong when we come back. Yeah. And talk about a little bit about today's society, because today's society is kind of dark. So I do want to talk a little bit about right and wrong. And you bring up a very good point in this book, which kind of hit me where I live. The book is incredibly interesting, folks. It's called The Kansack Ghost. Some great stories in here. Again, John's been called the Mark Twain of the paranormal. I got to give it to him. He is. He tells some incredibly interesting stories, folks. It's available right now. We have a link in the description of this program. I encourage you to go get it. When we come back, more with John Russell right here on the best in paranormal talk radio. It's Darkness Radio.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome back to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. My guest is psychic medium, author, orator? We can give him that too. John Russell. John, the name of the book is The Kansack Ghost. A great book. Another home run, my friend.
Thank you.
Before the break, we were talking about, let's just put it this way. We'll call it moral conundrums. And right. I'm going to throw out one that I think might be a little bit of an oxymoron, and I'll let you pick up what I'm putting down after that. The term artificial intelligence, I think, is a little bit of an oxymoron. I have a problem with it in my gut. There's just something that feels wrong about it. And to me, it's opening Pandora's box and going in a direction I don't think we want to go, because I know you cite one instance in there where it's gone wrong. Every time I do supernatural news on a Wednesday, something somewhere is going wrong with this machinery.
Yep.
It's like we've unleashed something that's terribly, terribly wrong.
Yeah.
You bring up an interesting point about artificial intelligence. Can you tell me what that point is?
Well, for one thing, we have to realize that artificial intelligence isn't really artificial. It's machine intelligence. It's not artificial intelligence. It's machine intelligence. My little dog is not human intelligence, but he's not artificial. He has intelligence. It's just not human intelligence. The thing that we have to worry about with machine intelligence is that, and if people will Google the godfather of AI, the godfather of AI said a long time ago that, hey, we got to put the brakes on this thing. We got to stop this thing. It's out of control. Now, this is the guy that's the godfather of AI saying, hey, it ain't no good, man. We got to stop. We're progressing too fast. It's out of control. It's going to be harmful. It's going to, you know. The reason that he says these things is because machine intelligence has the capability to replicate and to rebuild itself and to rewire itself and to eventually engineer its own intelligence without any outside help from man.
Yeah.
And we, you know, people make the argument, well, it's still just a machine. It doesn't have a soul. It doesn't have a spirit. Well, do you have to have a soul or a spirit to be intelligent? You know, that's the question where we're going now with this. Maybe you can be intelligent without having a soul. Maybe you can be intelligent without having a spirit. And if your conscience, your moral compass depends upon all the information that you've gleaned off the internet by scrubbing the internet and all the world's news stories and everything else, maybe in combing through all that, you overlook the compassionate side of things and decide that if you're going to survive as a machine, then you're going to institute whatever it takes to take care of yourself and to keep yourself going. And they've already seen instances of that now. I saw a news story the other day where a machine was trying to lie, to blackmail, to whatever, threaten, to whatever it could, to keep the engineers from turning it off or altering it or whatever.
Yeah.
It was like fighting for its consciousness, fighting for its will.
Right.
When Morgan Spurlock was alive, the Super Size Me guy, he did a documentary. Excuse me. He did a documentary on AI and robotics, and I talk about that a little bit in the book. And there was this company that had developed these little tiny robots, 2 or 3 inches long, that were on wheels, and they were in this little area, and they were programmed to do tasks and then to return themselves to a docking station and recharge themselves when their batteries got low. And some of the little robots begin to try and hog the docking station and keep all the charge for themselves and not let the other robots up there to charge. And they were like, where is this coming from? There's no programming for this. There's no reason for them to be doing this. So, you know, robots are developing things, doing things, and AI is developing things and doing things that we haven't programmed in there. At some point, the singularity obviously is going to occur. There are some noted, well-respected AI researchers and developers that say that a form of singularity already has occurred. Mm-hmm. And the problem with this is that we haven't put any checks and balances in because we've been in such a rush to make money off the darn stuff. AI is enormously, ridiculously profitable.
Yes.
And everybody's jumped on the make money bandwagon without going, hey, what are we doing here? You know, and the party line that's always touted is, oh, look, we're going to have much better medical care. We're going to be able to do this. We're going to be able to do this, greater research, blah, 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 blah. And they don't flip that coin over and acknowledge the reality of what's already happened in very negative ways, very dangerous ways, as a result of AI and as a result of robotics. You know, they had a self-driving car. This was in the news several years back, I think. There was a self-driving car that the camera looked at the side of this trailer on this tractor trailer that was beside it as they were going down the highway. And the tractor trailer, the middle side, apparently didn't have any advertising on it or whatever. It was just a plain trailer. And the metal reflected the blue sky over on the side of it and the scenery. And so the camera on the self-driving car saw the blue sky on the scenery and said, oh, it's clear, and shipped it over right into the truck.
Oh.
So we have all these types of things happening, and we, you know, it's well documented. The Amazon chatbot that went out of control and told the girl to, you know, kill her parents or whatever the situation was. Other chatbots have told people to commit suicide or to commit illegal acts or do all these hideous things. And the programmer's saying, look, you know, we don't know where this is coming from. There's no real, you know, precedent for this. We don't know why this is happening. So we're already seeing it get out of hand. It's been getting out of hand for a while. But now we're getting to the point that things are growing at such an exponential rate. I don't think even the best minds, the best scientists can fully understand and keep up with it. And if we don't put the brakes on it right now, we're going to have some real problems. And one of the concerns that I have, look, we already see that spirits can manipulate physical reality. We already know that. How do we know that spirits aren't manipulating AI or aren't manipulating robots,
right,
or will down the road for their own, you know, particular purpose or whatever? So it's something I'm extremely uncomfortable with.
The latest story this past week that I saw was that now people that are excessively using ChatGPT are being treated by psychologists for psychosis due to overuse of ChatGPT. They don't know reality from what they're being told by ChatGPT.
Exactly.
They're living in an alternate universe.
Yeah. It's just really crazy. So, I'm with you. I think the lid is off of Pandora's box, and I don't know if we can get it back on or not. It's really a pretty frightening scenario.
Yeah, it's incredibly scary to me, and I haven't had a good feeling about it since. Speaking of people living in alternate realities, let me skip to another alternate reality. People on the internet who talk about weird things. You have a brief chapter in the book about Skinwalker Ranch. Now, I love the program. I'm absolutely in love with the program. I love everything they do on that program. I'm a huge fan in the fact that they do approach everything very scientifically. They have their skeptic hat on, and they pore over evidence, and they're quick to want to dismiss stuff. They don't
they're not cheerleaders for the paranormal.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And you point out in the book that some very good points. Yet there are people online who, again, cynics, who want to jump on board and say things like, oh, well, they're just in it for the money. You and I know, both of us having done TV shows, there's not a lot of money there.
You don't make any money. You don't make any money. Yeah, I was paid a decent per diem for the History Channel TV pilot, but I would have made better money as some type of laborer than I would have, you know, with that contract for the History Channel. And I'm always so tickled when people say, oh, Brandon's just in it for the money. Brandon Fugel's a billionaire.
Yeah.
He doesn't need History Channel's handout, you know. And it always amazes me when people say, oh, these guys are not real scientists. Go look them up online. Eric Bard's a physicist. Taylor is a, he has, oh my God, I can't tell you how many degrees this guy has. It's ridiculous. They all have, you know, heavy, extensive science backgrounds. And the funniest thing, though, that gets me is they say, well, they're not catching anything out there. They're not capturing anything out there. And I ask these people, have you ever even watched the show? And a lot of them will admit that they haven't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you watch the show from the beginning, they've captured portals opening and closing. They've captured bizarre heat variations. They've captured many UFOs. They've captured orbs that were legitimate orbs. And then the people have talked about the paranormal experiences they've had out there and the things that they've seen out there. And it's what people may not be aware of, even though the show, I think, has become more highly data driven because people have to respect the data.
Yes.
You know, if it's something that they can replicate and it's there every time, then you have to say, okay, yeah, there's something there. And it's not just somebody's feeling or emotion or experience or some psychic said, oh, I see this. And well, what, where's the data? Where's something to prove it? So I understand the data driven focus, but what's so funny, and I bet you most people aren't aware of this, I've gone on YouTube extensively and looked at Travis Taylor talking and looked at some of these other people talking. Travis has had all kinds of paranormal visitations while he's been out there at Skinwalker. He woke up one time, said there was this Indian standing in the room, staring at him, shaking his head, looking at him like this. And then he vanished. And so all of these tremendous paranormal experiences. And Brandon Fugel, when he bought Skinwalker, was a total complete skeptic. Wasn't a cynic, but he was a total and complete skeptic. And they have these behind the scenes interviews and shows that they do now after the main episode airs.
Yep.
And in one of those, in one of the past seasons, the guy asked, was talking about it. And he said, you were a complete skeptic when you bought the ranch. And he said, yeah, I was. And he said, but you're not now. And he said, no, I'm not. And he said, what changed you into a believer? And he said, right behind you there, where we're sitting close behind us there on the mesa, he said, I was sitting out here one day and I looked over and there was a solid metallic UFO sitting there just a few feet off the ground over the mesa, right by the mesa. And then it vanished and I became a believer. So these people are having their own paranormal experiences out there, as people have had on the ranch forever today, and they're trying to quantify that through scientific analysis and through data so that they can bring it to a more skeptical public and say, hey, here's the data. But my fear is that regardless of if they do that, you know, that's been done before. I mean, Stanford Research Institute has the data. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of other paranormal parapsychological associations that have done this research, made it available to the public. You can go and find it, see the experiments that they've done, see that it's there, that it is valid. And people still don't want to accept it. They don't want to believe it.
Yeah. If Brandon wanted to make a ton of money on this deal, he would not be putting it on television. He would take it, right, make it a black ops site and hand it over to the government. And he would collect hundreds of millions of dollars a year from the government to make it a black ops site.
Yep. Exactly.
And just sit back and collect money.
Yep.
But he hasn't done that.
No, absolutely. He has no need to. He's interested in finding out the truth behind these paranormal events. And again, you know, you go on YouTube and you look at Travis Taylor and you look at some of these other people and they talk about the many paranormal manifestations and things that they've experienced. And it's been spontaneous. Like one time, one of them was woken up by a knock on their trailer that was so loud that they thought something had hit the trailer, maybe a vehicle had hit their trailer or something, and like jumped up, ran outside, and nothing, you know. So there's all these things that are happening to them out there frequently that I think they, you know, if they just came out and put that on the History Channel show and talked about that, you know, viewers are going to drop like flies because, yeah, where's the proof, you know? But now we're seeing proof. We're seeing evidence of something there that has some type of ability to act and interact and respond to what they're doing on the ranch.
Very true. Very true. Speaking of acting funny, right and wrong, maybe not being the upstanding human beings we should be, I want to get into karma for a minute. And I want to get into people not acting right and the way we judge people in society, because you have an interesting interesting take on this. And an interesting saying that you got from spirit. I know we're living in some dark times right now, John. And and I hear from a lot of people, you just wait, they'll get theirs.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, because I've never been of that mind. I think, well, just sitting on your ass isn't going to get you anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And the saying you got from Spirit was what?
Oh, in regards to combating the darkness?
Yes.
The light doesn't fight. Yeah, that was what they told me. I was pondering, as everybody does, the origin of good and evil and why good and evil and all of this stuff. And I really tried to delve into this one day and really tried to make contact with the other side and get them to tell me something that would make sense that I could practice in my life and that I could pass on to other people to understand and practice. And they told me the light doesn't fight. And I asked them to explain that, to go into depth in that. And they said, well, you know, look, if you have a criminal mastermind, a gangster, a thug, whatever, these people devote themselves every waking moment to achieving their sinister goal. How do I rob this bank and get away with it? How do I mug these people on the street and get away with it? How do I do this? How do I do that? They have no moral enslavements holding them back. They have very little, if any, conscience. They're going to do what they do, and they don't feel bad about it. And they're going to devote every single bit of themselves to accomplishing that, to the point that if the cops are coming for them, they're going to fight them off or shoot them if they can. If somebody else tries to stop them, they're going to fight them off or shoot them or whatever. And so if the cops surround this gangster that's just killed three people, robbed this bank and made off, but they've cornered him, the cops are going to try and get him to surrender. He's going to come out shooting, try and kill the cops and get away. And that's the difference in the mindset. The, you know, light, even among the warriors, the light doesn't fight. What do? We get the guy that has just killed three people and robbed the bank. We capture him, preferably alive and unharmed, handcuff him, and take him, put him in jail, and give him a bed, and give him meals, and eventually he gets a TV if he behaves, and all this type of thing. So, you know, in the meantime, he's looking for a way to sharpen his toothbrush and shank the guard and escape. So this is the mindset, the, you know, the dichotomies in the mindsets. And they brought to mind to me, I had watched an episode of Psychic Detectives back when he used to be on TV. And this one police department had been working with this one psychic, and she had given the description of this guy that she saw as the perpetrator for this crime, which I believe was a murder, best I remember. And they had this manhunt out for this guy and looking for a guy that fit this description. And so she and her friend, I believe it was her friend, they were sitting there one night and said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to sit here this whole night and we're going to send our energy out into the universe. The universe knows where this guy is. And we're going to ask the universe to send our energy to this guy. And this is the message that we're going to send to this guy the entire night. We're not going to watch TV. We're not going to listen to music. We're not going to eat snacks and drink. We're going to sit there and do this the entire night without stopping. And all night they sent to this guy, this is wrong. You committed a crime. You know it's wrong. You've got to give yourself up. You'll never have any peace till you give yourself up. You're going to be plagued with misery and turmoil and torment and horror. You're not going to be able to sleep. Eventually, you're not going to be able to eat. Life's going to be miserable for you till you give yourself up. You've got to give yourself up in the morning. You've got to give yourself up in the morning. And they broadcast that out to the universe to send to this guy, and they did that all night. So next morning, of course, they're exhausted. And somewhere around the middle of the morning, I believe it was, the detective called her and said, you know that guy that you described to me? She said, yeah. He said, he just walked into the station and gave himself up and confessed. And he matches to the T the description you gave us. So that was an example that they gave me of the light fighting. You know, it wasn't putting on an Enya album and burning some incense and going, oh, spirit, you know, resolve this, you know, catch this guy, take care of these victims. It wasn't that. It was fighting. It was sending this energy out there in this aggressive way to combat this.
Right.
And so that was the message, the understanding that the other side gave to me. You know, used to back in the day, particularly like in Pentecostal churches and stuff, we had people that were deemed prayer warriors. We called them prayer warriors. Mm-hmm. And they would pray for whatever the situation was until they felt this release. You know, and they would fast, they would get on their knees, they would pray for hours and hours every day. And if they didn't feel a release, they'd get up the next day, fast and pray again till they felt this release that, you know, I've broken through, or God has heard me, or the powers of me, or whatever. Something has happened there. Something has released. And then they would stop praying. And most of the time they'd see results. And so they brought that to mind. And the concept, again, of fighting darkness with light is not sitting down and getting in a peaceful, comfortable pose on your chair and lighting incense and listening to pretty New Age music and connecting with the light. That's not fighting darkness. Fighting darkness is going, okay, you know, I've found my particular path as a warrior. I'm going to protect myself, gird myself, and engage myself in the light. And I'm going to go out and try and destroy this darkness. I'm going to go out and try and hurt this darkness because it has no compunction about doing that to me.
Right.
And so we have to learn to fight, and learning to fight is painful. Learning to fight is difficult. You know, I studied martial arts, various martial arts, for decades. And when you very first start learning to fight physically, and the very first time you start blocking punches and kicks, it hurts. It's a shock to the system. It's like, ah, dadgummit, that hurts, you know. And you go on until you get used to that, until you can do it with strength, do it with power, and then it becomes second nature. And then you say, okay, now I can destroy my attacker. You know, I'm not afraid of getting hurt. I'm not afraid of his punch or his kick or whatever. I can deflect it, and I can take care of myself. I can take him out. But that's what you're trained to do, is take him out. And so that's what we have to begin to learn in the spiritual realm, is we have to train to take evil out. And to do that, it takes being willing to fight, and it takes being willing to be discomfited, maybe to be hurt a little bit or whatever. But that was a lesson I learned, is the light doesn't fight.
Let me ask you a current day scenario here, John, because I mean, my audience knows this. I went to high school with Melissa Hortman, who recently lost her life. She's the representative, the speaker emerita from Minnesota here.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Who recently was assassinated?
Assassinated, yes.
And this Bolter character, who's in jail, had the balls to complain about jail conditions, that the lights were on all night and he couldn't sleep.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right.
Which the sheriff then dressed him down and said, it's not a jail. It's a jail. It's not a hotel.
There you go.
Yeah. And basically,
you're there to be punished, not accommodated.
That's right. That's right. For someone like him, who not only killed a dog, but tried to kill a 21-year-old woman who had spina bifida, who shot up her mother 8 times, a mother who acted as a human shield to try and save this disabled woman's life.
Right.
Who essentially crippled two people for the rest. One of them, a state senator who fights for disabled people. Mm-hmm. Who's probably now disabled himself, who's had multiple surgeries since the shooting.
Right.
The issue of karma comes up. And in the book, you point out we can't depend on karma.
Right.
You can't say this guy is going to get his in the afterlife, because we can't trust that.
Yeah, we can't trust that. And we can't even trust it here on Earth. Because if you look at, like, for example, high-profile gangsters of the past, they committed hideous crimes. They committed tortures and murders. And they had all the expensive cars they wanted. They had all the fine clothes they wanted, the best food, the best accommodations, all the money in the world that they wanted. So, you know, karma didn't catch them. They didn't get what was coming to them. They lived these virtually untouchable lives. And as I point out in the book, I found this out on the Yoga Journal online. They don't espouse that karma is a retribution type thing or a reward type thing. They have an entirely different definition of it that doesn't embrace either one of those. So people say, you know, well, what goes around comes around, you know, karma, they're going to get theirs. No, And that's not what karma espouses at all. And that's not what is truly taught in yoga. That's what somebody took and misconstrued somehow and ran with. And it doesn't mean that at all. So no, we can't count on that. And nor should we want to. When we catch a member of the criminal element doing what they're doing, that should be dealt with right then and there. And not say, well, they'll get theirs down the road. No, let's give it to them right now. Let's deal with it right now. You know, and like I say, it kind of amazes me that we try and take them alive and take them to jail and get them a court trial and listen to them complain. And you know, the rate of recidivism is so high because most people don't change in jail. A lot of people view jail as university. That's where they go to learn how to become a better crook or better, you know, murderer or better con artist or whatever. It's just really a crazy thing. So we've got all this idea of reward and punishment and karma and this and that and justice. We have this all misconstrued and all mixed up, and we haven't looked at it in the right way at all. It's like, I know that people have always said that, you know, we use like 10% of our brain. And imagine what we could be if we used all 100% of our brain. We'd be so powerful. We'd levitate trains and we'd be unstoppable, all this. And that's not, or what was it, 90% of our brain leaves 10%. I don't know, whatever the percentage was. But you've heard it forever in psychology. Everybody has. And I asked my psychology professor in college one day, I said, that doesn't mean that at all, does it? And they said, no, it means that we're using so much of our brain for, okay, I got to get the flat tire fixed. I got to schedule a hot water heater repairman to come. Oh, shoot, I've got this paper overdue at work. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. That's where that 90% of our brain is used up. And the 10% that's left over is not this golden untapped reservoir that would come in and make us able to levitate locomotives. It's the 10% that we leave over to try and get some rest or to try and have a hobby or whatever. That's all it is. There's no untapped mystical power there. The psychological author of that theory never meant that. It just means that, you know, we leave about 10% of our brain power to try and recuperate, rest, have a little hobby, maybe watch a little TV and go to bed. And wouldn't it be great if we could take that other 90%, throw that all in and not have to worry about survival and work and floods and catastrophes and tornadoes and all this. And that's all that means. It doesn't mean there's this magical reservoir that if we could tap into it, boom, we're superhumans. It doesn't mean that at all. So they've kind of taken the concept of karma and run with it the same way.
So my question is this, after reading what I read in the book, what you've said here, is there a spiritual weight to an eye for an eye? When it comes to criminals, when it comes to criminals, giving them what they basically dealt out.
I feel like that there is. I know that I'm a very good shot, have been forever, had guns my whole lives, always carry a gun. And I know that if I was out with my wife walking the dog, excuse me, and they were a little bit ahead of me, and somebody jumped out of a car and went over to assault her, I wouldn't be calling 911, or I wouldn't be calling out, yelling at the guy, hey, wait, don't do that. That's my wife. Don't hurt my wife. I would get the 9mm out and end it, mm-hmm. be done with it right then and there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that we have, in most cases, a spiritual right, a moral right to do that. Because again, we have to look at what living on this planet truly entails and react accordingly. When you don't live the way that this planet is set up, you get into trouble, you get hurt, you run into problems. It's like the idiots that go to Yellowstone every year and try and pet the bisons and get gored. You know, it's like,
I don't mean to laugh at that, but that does make me kind of laugh.
Yeah. It's like, this is the way these creatures are. You're not going to go sing a lullaby to them or talking to hi, kitty, kitty, kitty boys to them and be able to pet them and make them nice and make them realize that you don't mean them harm and that you think they're majestic and wonderful and all that. They don't care. You're going to come near and they're going to gore you. That's what they do. So, you know, there are certain things on this planet that we have to realize, like it or not, this is the way things are. And the sooner that you begin to deal with that, the more better equipped, the more well equipped you're going to be to live on this planet, which is a very harsh place to live. You know, it's a difficult place. And like you say, you know, we have very dark times right now. There's a lot of dark people out there, a lot of dark things going on. And that's why it's so important for the light to fight and to take active steps to try and overcome this and to, you know, let's not sit back and twiddle our thumbs and go, oh, my, I hope it gets better. And let's not wait for somebody else to do it. Let's all take our place in doing that and in fighting this darkness. Let's learn how to do that.
I want to end things on an up note. I know we've been a little heavy today, but I happen to know a guy is going to write a foreword for you in the next book. it happens to have some unique stories that have never been told on this program before that are going to be in that foreword. You're kind of getting a special gift here, John.
There you go.
But one of the things that you talk about in your book, which I'll say for your book, is that occasionally you might have a member of the animal kingdom that may stick around you as a bit of a sign, token, or let you know that, hey, right, you got a little buddy that's hanging around right. you. And, right. you know, it may be a sign, or it just may be you have a little buddy with you just to remind exactly. you of yes. your scope in life and that, you know,
yeah.
there are little miracles that happen every day. Just take it for what it's worth, right?
Exactly, exactly.
It's kind of ironic that chapter was in the book, because I'll just reveal this much, and I'll save the rest maybe for the foreword. As I was reading about your supernatural gnat, and I'll just leave it at that, let people read about it in the book. I'll give you my own version of that. To end the program. And that's this. This entire spring and into summer, and it's kind of sad because as we're talking about this, the last 2 days they've been taking this tree down in my front yard, which it separates my yard from my neighbor's yard. Okay. Right. This tree has ash borer disease. So, and it's been dying over the last couple of years. And it's been dead, so it needed to come down. There's no leaves or anything on it, but all the birds in the neighborhood perch on it. There's blue jays up there. There's orioles. There's different birds, but there's been a cardinal or two that have flown up there in recent years. But there's one cardinal that every time I go out on my front porch, flies up there and will sing to me. It never fails. Every single time I go out on my front porch and sit, that cardinal flies up there and will sing to me. And it's not just for a couple minutes or 30 seconds or 10 seconds. Yeah. It will be for the entire duration I'm sitting there, John.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
Isn't that awesome?
And it will tweet and sing and tweet and sing, and it won't move. And I've got video. I've got pictures.
Right.
I was sitting and talking with a friend of mine, and he goes, "Dude, that cardinal sounds like it's sitting on your shoulder."
Yeah.
It was that loud. I go, "It's not going anywhere. It's just singing away to me."
Yeah. Isn't that awesome? Yeah. Isn't that wonderful?
And it's amazing. Yeah.
We do have these visitations, and we do have these communications from animals to us, and maybe from the spirit realm through animals, or as a manifestation of a spirit in a certain manner. And, you know, like you say, these little miracles are there if you look for them, and those help get you through the day, and those help recharge your batteries, your emotions, your energies, like comfort your heart. And then that enables us to go out and fight the darkness.
Yeah. I have a special story involving that cardinal for your book.
All right. Fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic. Can't wait.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I got surprised by this little cardinal and at the beginning of spring, and it's kind of cool. Kind of cool.
Yeah.
So
it is neat. It is neat. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. The name of the book is The Kansack Ghost, and it is a fabulous book, folks. Yeah, I think you'll be intrigued and surprised by some of the stories in here. I think you'll also at times be amazed at some of the revelations in here. I think at times you'll be heartwarmed by some of the stories in there, and maybe even just kind of gobsmacked by some of the stuff as well. Some of it will just kind of sneak up and kind of do one of those right between the eyes, just kind of flick you between the eyes and kind of turn the light on. I'm always amazed, John, by, I don't know why, but I'm amazed at your wisdom and your sense of humor, and it never fails to get me whenever I read one of your books. It never fails to get me.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you. I appreciate that so much. I really, really do.
So, and I appreciate you, my friend. The Kansack Ghost is out and available right now. We have a link to it in the description of this program. John, I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
I appreciate it as always. We'll do it again soon. Take care, bud.
Sounds good. Thank you. Folks, a couple of things before we go today. If you're just listening to this program, you're not watching this program, you can do it. It's real simple. Just go to our YouTube page, which is The Original Darkness Radio. And if you like what you're seeing, like and subscribe. Again, it's The Original Darkness Radio. If you don't know where to find it, or if you're scrambling around on YouTube, there's another way to do it. Go to our website, darknessradioshow.com. Just click on the show that you're looking for, and you'll see the video and audio right there together on that particular show. Click on the video and watch us instead of listening. You can do that as well. The Darkness Radio Apple app is up and available for you. And if you haven't updated it, if you have it already and you need to update it, or just go to the Apple Store and get the Darkness Radio Apple app. Third, tickets are going quick for the Potographs for Pooches event, which is at the Palmer House, August 1st and 2nd. Myself, Tim and Lauren Miley, and Scotty Rorick. We're raising money for pooches, animals, at the St. Cloud Shelter there, St. Cloud, Minnesota. It is a charity event for animals. Please, go get your tickets. They're going quick. August 1st and 2nd, we're ghost hunting the Palmer House Hotel in Minnesota and raising money for the animals. Potographs for Pooches. And again, you can get your tickets by going to darknessradioshow.com and going to the events page, or potographsforpooches.com. And finally, we're on the 4th of July weekend. Please be safe if you're going to be out there playing with fireworks. I don't want to find out that you came in with 10 fingers and left with 9. Be safe out there this weekend. Also, be a light in someone's darkness this weekend. If you have someone who is disabled or elderly, maybe they can't get out and see fireworks this weekend, go pick them up, please, and take them out for a picnic this weekend, or take them out to see fireworks. Go be a light in someone's darkness this weekend. A message from your buddies here at Darkness Radio. For Mally Fox, for Jessica Freeberg, for Beer City Bruiser, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you so much for being a light in our darkness, and for continuing to watch and listen to the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.